Welcome to the Labor Beat program, broadcasting on Enlightened Radio. You can see our blog site, www.enlightenradio.org, almost any time. And I post announcements there. But the podcasts that we're turning from these live broadcasts into podcasts is on podcasts.enlightenradio.org. And usually the player is at the top of each of the pages. But if you're on a cell phone, sometimes the player is hidden behind the page. And so if you want to always see the player to listen, you just go to player.enlightenradio.org. And that's all that's there is really the player and a message about what's currently playing. I want you to welcome a special guest to the program this morning. And my co-host J.B. Christensen's here, and we've been doing this program for off and on for 15 years almost. mostly we were focusing on state issues most of the time, and people and folks in the state legislature that were active on bills that were important to labor. But now with this sort of national upheaval going on, are trying to, develop some widespread solidarity, or at least a better understanding amongst the labor movement, and especially in West Virginia, where we're targeting our broadcasts, about what's going on. And one of the biggest items going on is centered around the United Parcel Service, UPS, national agreement or contract negotiations with the Teamsters Union. And Joe Henry here is, I haven't known him a long time, but I think I met you in person the first time a few weeks ago. And he's been very active as both a one point employee of UPS and active in the Teamsters Union. I think as a representative of some kind. I want him to introduce himself a little bit better than I'm doing right now. But he's very much involved and active in connection with the current struggle of Teamsters to take on some very important issues. I'll let him enumerate them, and then maybe we'll get back to it. So I'm so thankful that you're able to join us this morning, Joe. And why don't you open up for us, and maybe even Scotty will wake up and come on in time. You might be
all right. Yep. So I can say a lot, so you can stop me at any point in time, or we can go on discussion. But I think it's important to note for the folks that are listening in right now that there are 150 major contracts that are going to be negotiated this year that are expiring right now. And of that, it's going to have an impact on 1.6 million workers across the country. So this is a very big year with UPS negotiations, with the Teamsters negotiating with UPS, coming out of the gate with 340,000 workers here in the U.S. and Canada. And it's important to note that, a national opinion poll was done a couple years ago from Gallup that indicated that 68% of Americans polled approve of unions, which has been rising over the last decade. So that's very important to know. Even though we may be at a low point based upon 2021 of only 6.1% of workers in the private sector being unionized since the passage of the National Labor Relations Act in 1935, there has been increased organizing going on over the last couple years, very important. And so there is movement, and workers are excited. They're also angry with what has happened over the last several years. During the pandemic, workers were not getting enough. Warehouse workers, truck drivers, especially in meatpacking, UPS workers had to work through that, classified as essential workers. So workers are fed up. They're upset. They want to get good wages. Inflation has impacted their take-home pay. So now workers are demanding more. And at UPS, it's very clear. And as you all know, and you've been hearing on the news, the contract at UPS expires on July 31st, a week from today, at midnight. In 1997, I was working for the Teamsters. I was actually in the Teamsters for 23 years, 16 years working at UPS in the warehouse and driving trucks, and then 7 years after that, working for National President Ron Kerry on the third floor of the Teamsters building in Washington, D.C., within the Field Service Department. Our department was made up at the time of the strike of 19 people who worked in the field across the country, working with the 200 plus Teamster locals that had UPS members. So we had to plan things out in the field to help coordinate things when this to plan for the strike. Let me begin here to say that strike was a very high stake showdown. And corporate America was not happy because this was something where nothing like this had happened in recent American history in 1997. Phone calls to Congress and the White House began from all sectors of corporate America to stop the strike. That happened in 1997. For 15 days, we walked the line, reached out to labor allies at the AFL-CIO, communicated with local and national press about our fight for a full-time America. It took 9 months of preparation before the strike, building unity within the ranks, establishing union solidarity internationally in preparation for the strike. And then on August 1st of 97, we launched our multifaceted field campaign, put picket lines in place, held on-site rallies. We did roving pickets. We followed scab drivers as they attempted to deliver partials. We did intensive communications with media outlets, both locally and nationally, encouraging community coalitions to join our fight. We had Jobs with Justice, the Rainbow Coalition, well-known figures like Jesse Jackson joining us on the picket lines, and making it clear that our fight was a fight for all workers. It was a fight for a full-time America. After 15 days, we won. We were able to raise wages, create 10,000 more full-time jobs from part-time ranks, protecting and increasing Teamster pensions, and putting an end to subcontracting. It was basically a $1 billion contract over 5 years. Now, here we are again. This time, though, we have veterans from that strike within the ranks, rank and file at UPS. We also have a platform to build upon because we showed then in 97 that we could conduct a national strike and win successfully. The number of workers back in 1997 at UPS was 185,000 26 years ago. Now it's nearly double with 340,000. Now, unlike before, where we had very little funds in the strike fund, in 97, we had to take out a loan from the AFL-CIO. This time, there's over $300 million in the Teamster strike fund, which could last for a couple weeks. This time, like last time, unions from 118 countries in Europe, Africa, Latin America, representing UPS employees, have committed to join the strike when the call is made. That is solidarity. So the countdown begins now. Days remaining, less only a week left remaining in negotiations. And actually, today, UPS is meeting with the Teamsters in Washington, D.C. Again, the fight is to raise wages for part-timers, create more full-time jobs from the part-time ranks, stop forced overtime for full-timers, end the two-tier wage system, secure pension benefits, and improve rights in the workplace. We also hear, as of last week, UPS is getting ready to present an offer to the union. However, the union leadership will decide whether that offer gets presented to the membership and whether it's put to a vote. If the company behaves like it did last time, we need to be prepared. So all hands on deck this time. We are, if the Teamsters do go on strike at midnight on July 31st, there will be a need for community groups, for local union groups, the AFL-CIO to participate, local central labor bodies. There will probably also be a need for a boycott of UPS in different forms, both at the retail outlets and at the big customers that UPS has, if they attempt to accept packages from UPS, even with roving pickets, And again, we have unions in other countries, 118 countries, that are willing and able to go out on strike internationally. The pilots with another union have already declared that they will honor the picket line, and they will not fly the cargo planes that UPS has. Louisville, Kentucky has 10,000 plus UPSers. That is the biggest air hub for UPS, and actually probably the biggest in the world. Eyes will be upon what happens in Louisville on August 1st. In Atlanta is another area where there is a big air hub. But again, this is something that's going to set the pace for other union contracts. Again, 1.6 million workers. After this, the auto workers will be negotiating with the big three automakers in Detroit. That's going to be a big one. With I believe that is, how much is that? About 100. I can't imagine. It's about 150,000. And then, of course, we have the actors that are already on strike with 160,000 workers. And then we also have the healthcare workers over on the West Coast that will be going in negotiations. That's another 75,000. Yes,
Yes. Wow.
lots to prepare for.
Questions. JB, you have a question? I'm just going to do questions and then I'm going to respond. But
Well,
I got
I was taken aback by all the statistics, Joe. You did a great job of spelling it out. I knew it was a big number, but I'd never seen it like that. And I wrote it down and going to commit it to memory.
I have more if you want to hear them.
Well, I think it's great because these are things that I've been wanting to know for a while now, and you just summarized it. It was great. And you said 130 contracts, or is it 135?
It's 150 contracts. So 150
wow.
large union contracts set to expire this year, more than 1.6 million. Detroit automakers, 150,000. SAG after 160,000, 75,000 Kaiser Permanente, 90,000 Florida AFSCME, the local unions, California Child Care with 40,000, City University of New York with 30,000. And that's just part of them. Safeway, grocery, 24,000. Metropolitan Transit Authority, 35,000. So,
wow, that's just amazing.
If
this can't get you excited, if this doesn't excite you, nothing will. You know, I mean, this is great.
Right. The working class.
I was a marine engineer for 30 years with the MEBA. And one time I went to a night job in Baltimore, and there was a strike set up by the by Lane Kirkland's old union, the MMP.
Right.
And they were on the railroad track, and the ship was on the other side of the tracks. And I had never witnessed that before. I'd never been in a position like that before. So I called the dispatcher, well, actually the agent in Baltimore, Don Masingo. And I said, Don, I can't go to this job. They're on strike. You know, I gotta cross the picket line. I'm not gonna do that. And he said, you get your ass on that ship right now. So we weren't very good at recognizing our rival unions pickets, but and I was ashamed of that. I felt ashamed of that, but they didn't vandalize my car or anything, so that was good. But really, I have very little experience other than the UAW strike a few years back, and then we had a local strike here that just ended with Sherwin-Williams with a very right. you know, a very small group, Sherwin-Williams Paint,
right?
And so I'm really pumped up for this. This is going to be some summer. This right. is going to be great.
A couple of questions I had. One is the expansion since 1997 in the workforce. Is that a reflection of what happened during the pandemic with remoteness and the Amazon explosion? And what accounts for doubling the size was one question I had. The other one was, and where that business is coming from. And the other is, what happens, if the, what about the pressure on the president? If there's a strike of 330,000, workers, you know, oh, here comes Scott. All right, boy. Okay. That's, you know, someone's going to argue in the corporate world that that's a national security problem and blah, 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 and we're going to head down the road. So, I listened to Jared Bernstein's report the other day, and he was pretty good. I mean, we know him. He's a good guy, and he says our policy is to keep hands off, you know, which is not the same policy that was apparently at work in the railroad workers thing. So that's a question. What's about the focus on the president? And then the third, or I had a third one, and but I forgot it now, so I'll leave that to those
two.
Yeah,
the expansion. So, yeah, the expansion was caused, especially during the pandemic, when people who could stay at home were ordering online. So e-commerce definitely increased the amount of packages delivered by UPS. Now, UPS also delivers many of the Amazon packages too. So with Amazon increasing, it's not just Amazon using their trucks, but they use UPS trucks. Also, within the last 20 years, UPS has consolidated, has bought up companies. Overnight Trucking was a company that UPS bought, did some long haul partial business too. So all of that has led to, you know, nearly doubling the amount of employees at UPS, while at the same time making hundreds of billions of dollars in revenue every year. It was estimated by one UPSer who's kind of an accountant that if UPS, after paying for all expenses, was able to divvy up the profit, then every UPSer could make over $100,000. But of course, the way it goes right now is that the three major stockholder groups, Vanguard being the largest one that has 72% of the shares of UPS, is making tremendous amount of profits for its stockholders. And that's where the pressure also needs to be placed too, on Vanguard and the other companies that are investment entities on this. So those type of things. Now, what was your other question that you had, John?
What about the pressure on the president and Congress to not impose and to let the power? This is a good, I mean, the working class in general and GPS workers are in a better position labor market wise now than they've been in a long time. I mean, they're in a good position. Okay. And we should be able to exercise our power and come to a collective bargaining agreement. And now I don't know whether in the current atmosphere is an agreement even in the picture. I mean, I know from negotiations myself many times that nobody puts all their cards on the table to the last minute. Otherwise, everyone believes you're going to leave something on the table. You know, that's true.
Well,
on
I think
both sides,
this is how this is how it's probably going to roll out. I was saying this to somebody else the other day. So UPS announced last week they got this great offer that they're going to bring to the table. And that's today, because UPS negotiating team is meeting with the Teamsters negotiating team on the Hill, Washington, D.C. What is going on right now are all the Chamber of Commerce organizations throughout the country have put together a letter that has already been sent to Congress urging them to put pressure on the president to intervene on negotiations. So we're seeing that already. That happened in 97 also, where UPS was urging Congress and the president to intervene. And on the 11th day of the strike, the pressure was even more so that UPS was doing that. And I have some clips. Unfortunately, we can't play them right now of what UPS was saying on the 11th day. But basically what they said was, let our people vote. We have a proposal that's amazing that will satisfy the needs of our workers. And they said this to the press, the national press. So we foresee them trying to kind of go in a different direction without the union and do their own promotion with a proposal. But of course, what the Teamsters is going to do, as Ron Kerry did, the general president at that time, was we are the ones that are authorized to determine what is good for our members. We already had our strike vote. Back then it was 95% of the members authorized the strike. Now it's 97% of the members have authorized the strike. So President Sean O'Brien is going to decide whether or not whatever proposals UPS brings to the table today will be taken to a vote. Highly unlikely that that will happen. And we know that some of the major things that have not been settled is raising wages for part-time workers, which represents 60% of the workforce, which is a little over 200,000 of the workers at UPS are part-time. And about 100,000 of those, or half of those, make only about anywhere from $16 to $17 an hour, which is not enough to take care of a family, take care of an individual when you're working 3.5 to 4 hours a day. Lots will be happening with that. Back in 97, the company said we want Taft-Hartley to be used to stop the strike, to end the strike. We foresee again UPS to try to do that again. But again, as I stated with that Gallup poll that was done in 2021, 68% of Americans support unions, more so than in 97. And again, we have a platform that was built from the 97 strike. And UPS drivers have been very effective in communicating daily with customers, which makes this a unique campaign. You don't usually have a strike where you have the union people talking with the public on a daily basis.
Right.
So you have,
Yeah.
Tens of thousands of UPSers who are the public relation entity for the union and for all the workers. So
That's right.
this makes it very unique. If this strike is one, which I foresee possibly a strike happening, but if the negotiations are won, and I think that they will, this every UPSer will be a great union organizer afterwards and really set the positive nature of having a union and negotiating up to a strike as a possibility and being a very effective thing.
Solidarity is our part. Hey,
Oh, that's
Scott,
fantastic.
I want to make sure Scott's away. Are you still there? Are you there, Scott?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. Sorry, I was late.
Well, that's okay. Do you have any you have any questions or comments on Joe's this is the line in the sand apparently we're approaching here, so
Yeah.
that's my
Well,
dog.
I'm sorry I was late, so I missed this presentation and all of that. One thing that seems to be circulating is all kinds of people saying, "Oh, well, Biden's not going to support this strike now because if he does, and then it's going to cause a big economic problem, and he'll get blamed for it and all of that." And I'm just wondering if there's any discussion among you guys about that. And I actually don't think that he's going to back away from supporting you, but I just wonder what the discussion is within the union on that.
Yeah, well, it is as I understand, since I'm not part of the union anymore, but as a veteran, having done the field campaign back in '97, I can tell you lots of pressure was put on Clinton in '97 to intervene, and the Secretary of Labor at the time, Alexis Herman, was the mediator at that time to bring the parties together during the strike. So I think the worst case scenario is that the Department of Labor might offer their services to mediate a contract. But it's pretty clear that the president, in a, at a, at a, especially at a press conference briefing, it was stated that that the White House will not intervene. They'll help in any way to bring the parties together, but Taft-Hartley is not something that will happen. And of course, what the Teamsters have done, which has been very effective, is early in July, they sent out an email to members and community activists asking them to sign a letter online, which would then be immediately sent to people's respective members of Congress, House of Representatives, and senators. Those letters have been sent out by, hundreds of thousands from hundreds of thousands of people to members of Congress. And I've actually received calls back from my members of Congress here in Iowa asking me to provide more information. I made it very clear that we do not want the government to intervene on any possible strike that might occur. So it's a very effective
Right.
campaign right now, a PR campaign by the Teamsters. But the thing that is very clear is if the strike occurs a week from today at midnight, that it's going to be very important for communities to get involved, not only on the picket line, but also on doing everything they can to do a boycott, which community members can do. I mean, the public can do a boycott. The union members at UPS, though, can do the picket lines, but there will need to be some boycotts, especially at the retail outlets where UPS receives packages. There will probably be big customers that will continue to want to receive packages. There would need to be some consumer boycotts there. There will be the need for coalitions to be built on the ground, local AFL-CIO entities, all unions on deck to help out. And again, community groups, social justice groups. And like I said before at the beginning, Scott, 68% of Americans are in favor of unions, support unions, based upon the 2021 Gallup poll. So I think people are ready. They're very upset. That was another stat that was done a couple years ago. People are very upset. Workers are angry because they have not received their fair share of the wealth that has been created at these companies like UPS, Amazon, and Meatpacking is another example. Where workers were considered essential workers during the pandemic. So people are ready to fight. And I have been very impressed with the young workers, especially at UPS, voicing their concerns, ready to get out there and hit the streets. So what we're going to see 2 weeks from now is we're going to see a significant shift in the view of unions, the importance of unions, and how effective unions can be when they move to organize and negotiate contracts.
Let me ask question about
they're going to help Amazon and Starbucks, those workers trying to organize. That'll get them inspired. That's great.
FedEx?
FedEx in 97, FedEx workers joined the picket line with UPSers when they weren't working. They were walking the picket line with UPSers.
Now, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that was a big thing. And I think there's opportunities there for FedEx workers to say, hey, if UPS workers can get this increase, which is estimated of raising wages from $17 an hour to possibly up to $25 an hour as a starting pay at UPS for part-timers. Again, the call is a fight for full-time America like it was in 97, and 60% of the workforce at UPS is part-time. And the same is with FedEx and Amazon and so forth. And corporations have been very effective over the last 40 years to create two-tier wage systems and to move their full-time workers into part-time jobs to make higher astronomical profits. So the fight is on to change all that.
I just want to add, we know our local driver, and we've talked to him about it a bunch of times when he brought packages, and so he's expecting a lot of support. And I will say that I was down at a labor school, teaching at a labor school in at the University of Illinois Champaign, and we were talking. We just discuss all kinds of labor things and stuff, and we were talking about this. And I went outside, and there was a UPS driver unloading, and I went up and I said, how's it look for you guys? And so we started this conversation. And when I went back in and told people, they wanted to come back out and say hi to this guy and say, hey, we're going to be with you. We're going to support you and stuff like that, which leads me to the point that the steelworkers and the steelworker retirees are ready for this. And we're already talking about mobilizing in Chicago and other parts of the state. So I think you're right. I think the support out there among other union workers is incredible. I don't think we've seen this kind of labor unity in a long, long time, where everybody's ready to get out there on the picket lines and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's going to happen.
You know, there
it'll
is
be a hot summer.
Scott, I have a very interesting fact to know is that if the strike does happen, this will be the biggest strike since 1959 when the steelworkers went on strike.
Yes. I mentioned that in that lecture.
Okay. You know,
I've got a question for you.
Go ahead, Jibby.
Yeah, you mentioned that a Vanguard owns 70%.
72%.
72%. That's pretty big.
Vanguard, I'd call that a controlling interest. Actually.
Vanguard and BlackRock own everything. BlackRock, so, I mean, that's a formidable foe that you have there in Vanguard. I mean, they didn't get there by, you know, kowtowing to union contracts. So, what kind of strategy are you expecting from them to thwart the strike?
Well, there's not going to be much that they can do, but I can tell you what we were doing in the 90s under President Ron Carey. We had a corporate campaign department that basically what our corporate campaign office would do is they would work with the AFL-CIO to move money into different investment groups and use those stocks to demand justice at the companies that those investment groups had stocks in. So I foresee, and, you know, I don't know if this is the case or not, that the Teamsters and other groups like the AFL-CIO may have already done some changes in their portfolio so that they can put pressure on Vanguard and others, because Vanguard itself cannot do anything. Now, you also mentioned BlackRock. So BlackRock is also another investor in UPS, and these were entities that did not exist at UPS back during the 90s. But what, again, we were doing in the 90s is we were impacting or being successful in union negotiations where there were these investment groups by moving money and buying those stocks and then making a lot of noise at their annual meetings. So there's opportunities there. You know, the fight to end apartheid in South Africa back during the 80s, doing divestment entities, divestment campaigns, and then also going to boardrooms was important. But again, those investment groups can't do much other than, you know, they might tell the board to not agree to anything. But if the reality is, a strike will cause $1 billion of losses per day.
Wow.
Every day on strike. So the investment groups, you know, at the end of the day, will, you know, we would foresee they'd rather, you know, save the money than lose the money. But again, you know, this is a very unique period. What happens at UPS in these negotiations is going to change everything, because, you know, every major corporation has these major stockholder groups, like you had mentioned, with Vanguard and BlackRock.
You know, what occurs to me is the, you know, there was a great ILWU leader on the West Coast that, you know, was a veteran of the 1936, you know, general strike in San Francisco. And I remember he was quite elderly when I attended the meeting where he brought the whole ILWU convention to its feet with the phrase, "When the workers unite and sneeze together, the temples of Wall Street will tremble." And it was a great moment in his fiery speech. Unfortunately, he had false teeth like me, and they fell out after he said that. But so it was a combination of, you know, ovation and laughter that took place. But I mention that story just because I would not be sure that the counterattack against the Teamsters will be ferocious. Because I read the latest Supreme Court decision, for example, where the damage from strike can be subject to a lawsuit of damages, and the status of the Supreme Court on a whole range of rights, labor rights, environment, recovery, you know, reproductive, I mean, everything, civil rights.
Yep.
So, and this is going to cost them a lot of money that they, you know, yeah, accumulated. So I think it's probably be All the more reason why I think you're right. This is a critical moment, okay? Because there are forces that would, you know, push us farther back than even Taft-Hartley that work right now. And so, but that raises the question, I was going to ask you about, let's think about the Wagner Act and Taft-Hartley just for a moment in a very narrow sense. What is the punishment for the violation of labor rights and laws? Because right now there's not, you know, we have elections, one at Amazon and over 200 Starbucks facilities, but I don't think there's a bargaining recognition taking place yet in any of them. And there's no, what's the punishment?
Yeah, but John, you know that under the National Labor Relations Act, if the workers chose to do it, if they were united enough, they could just go ahead and walk out. Even though we have these negotiations going on with Amazon in different areas. Now, you know, the Teamsters were effective in organizing and negotiating a contract with Amazon subcontractor in California. That involved about 95 drivers there. And of course, Amazon's trying to stop funding or end the subcontracting there. But if workers chose to, they could just strike to get a contract. Now, is that unity there yet? No, not yet. But again, what we see happening at UPS, and of course, what we saw in 2020 with BLM, people upset, black and brown communities marching in the streets, and others joining them in those marches across the country. And that basically was a rehearsal point in time of people realizing their power existed by hitting the streets. Get off the sidewalk, get onto the streets, as Dolores Huerta once said, United Farm Worker leader. So, we've seen this rehearsal of workers preparing. So we're going to see a real big rehearsal happen with the rank and file at UPS. And that will show what happens with corporate America when their workers are united, especially with that strike vote of 97%. It's going to change. It really is. I mean, again, we look back to 2020. People were turning on their TVs and they were listening and to their local news, and just a mile or two down the street from them, people were marching in the streets. Who would have thought about that? Who would have thought about that? Just people just realizing the importance of unity and saying enough's enough. And we've reached this point. How many recessions have we gone through over the last 50, 60 years? Right. Constant recessions, constant changes in wages, increased inflation, with corporate America making more and more money and workers' wages going down and part-time jobs. And, you know, it used to be back in the 80s, early 80s, I used to hear pro companies say, well, if you want a good job, you just got to go out there and find one. Well, you can't find a good job that pays good wages anymore. So a lot of people, a lot of young people are very affected by this, and they know what they need to do.
You know, JB and I work with the state FFL and the Eastern Panhandle Central Labor Council, which JB is the current president. And what's the relationship nationally between the Teamsters and the FFL on other discussions on this about cooperation? And so that we're not aware of any in our state at the moment, but I'm going to inquire right after we get through this program. And so I wondered what conversations have already maybe taking place.
It seems regional, seems state by state. You know, the Teamsters are not affiliated right now with the AFL-CIO. We were affiliated with the AFL-CIO back during the 90s after Sweeney and Trumka took over. But they're, you know, Florida, the Teamsters are affiliated with the Florida Federation of Labor. In California, I believe that's the same way in different areas of California. But, you know, I'm sure there's been communication of solidarity, you know, with so many union contracts expiring this year, the importance of solidarity and helping each other out. John Deere's strike was a good example of unions coming together to support the UAW. So I think that's happening. We just don't know how much, but I think it's clear that this is going to be an historic moment in time. So the interest of all labor is really focused on participating in this effort.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, because I'm on the Chicago Federation of Labor delegate, and I'm going to find out right away. I'm going to get a hold of the president, who's a good friend, and I'm going to find out if we're talking about it and when we are going to talk about it. So
right.
It'd be so really much better. It'd be so much better if you were in the AFL-CIO for the long term, you know, for everybody, for the whole labor movement, because you guys are so big. You're huge.
Right. And under
more numbers.
Right. Under General President Ron Kerry, that was an important thing to do. So the Teamsters joined the AFL-CIO back in the early 90s and helped on electing Trumka and Sweeney to those top positions, because we had Lane Kirkland beforehand. So the Teamsters really helped out there. It was only during the Hoffa years that a division occurred, and that was very unfortunate that that happened. But yes, the House of Labor needs to be united again. It's up to us to be switchboard operators, to work on a local level, to communicate the importance of solidarity. So I myself have been communicating with my local labor, Central Labor Committee, or AFL-CIO, and also talking with folks on the state level too.
I think that's a good point to maybe end on here. We're at about the 40-minute level. Solidarity is our power. And I want to thank you so much, Joe, for joining us today on this program. And I know we have some takeaways, as Scott said.
We got work to do.
Yeah, we got work to do, you know. So thanks for the assignments, you know.
We'd love to have you back, Joe.
Thank you. In response to John, in our hands is placed the power and the might of armies magnified 1,000-fold.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Yeah. All right, buddy.
If you ever find yourself in D.C., we'll get together and take you out to lunch.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Take care. It's late, everybody, but everything comes next. Bye-bye.
That's right, John.
Bye.